So in our book series today, I'm going to be talking about the book by Ernest Holmes called The Anatomy of Healing Prayer. And it's the second book in the series called The Holmes Papers, which is three books. The Philosophy of Ernest Holmes is book one, and Ideas of Power is book three. And these books were compiled after Dr. Holmes died. He did not write them as books. They are transcriptions of talks that he gave during the last 10 years of his life. And I find them even more exciting than his early writings, which tend to be the ones that we study in the Science of Mind classes. Because as he got older, he had practiced this philosophy for 30 years and 40 years before he died, and had used it in harmony with lots of groups of people and within his own life, and discussed it with thousands of brilliant people over the years and studied lots more. So these three books represent the culmination of his thought in many ways before he died. And I quote Anatomy of Healing Prayer more often than any of the other books that he wrote. So I had more ahas as I was reading it, and it took me places that I really was looking to go and not finding the answers in other places. I'm sure the answers are everywhere, but this particular book was a gateway for me for shifts in consciousness that I wanted to make particularly. The most often... The piece of this book I quote most often, I remember it's on page 16, because when I got to it, it was like this wonderful flash of light for a question I'd been asking for 10 years. What he said was, we are not trying to reintegrate or disintegrate anything. We are trying to find that which is not disintegrated. That its substance will cast a new shadow on the pathway of this experience from the center of its own being, which is harmony, eternal peace. But an eternal and dynamic need to express itself, else God itself would long since have died of boredom. The way I've paraphrased that, since I didn't memorize all those words, is we are not trying to reintegrate or disintegrate anything. We are looking for that which has always been whole. And we want to reveal the wholeness of our being. And I think that's the essence of the Science of Mind philosophy, is that there is an innate wholeness to all life. There is a oneness to all life. And everything that exists, exists within the unity that is God. So we are part of that. There is nowhere else to be. And because we are a part of the divine exists within us as a wholeness, a full pattern. And he talks in this book about how that pattern is involved in the creation of every being. So there is that which is involved, which then evolves. That which is in us comes out through us and through our lives. So we aren't putting anything in, we're taking something out that is already a part of what we are. So we are not trying to create something that isn't, we are trying to recognize something that already is. It's a perceptual difference to come into harmony with the truth of our being. It is not a striving to be something that we are not, or to get something that we don't have when we create and manifest in our lives. We are allowing that which is already intrinsic to us to be revealed. And that feels incredibly relaxing to me. It feels like it's so much easier to simply learn to see the truth more powerfully in order to live it, rather than have to become something that we aren't quite sure of. There's another quote in the book about relaxing into well-being. I remember when my first minister says relaxation is spiritual, I thought that's way too good to be true. Another wonderful quote from Ernest Holmes, which is from a different book, How to Use the Science of Mind, is nothing is too good to be true. I like that one too. But this is a quote where he talks about relaxing into well-being. And the reason that, another reason why I like these books so much is that they were based on talks that he gave. So when you give a talk, you often tell stories. And these books contain the stories. Many of his other books contain the distillation of the philosophy, but they leave out the stories. And I'm a story person. I love stories. So this case, he's telling a story of how he was explaining this one morning to a young fellow who was a producer at one of the studios about Science of Mind. And Ernest observed that this man was working really hard. And he said, "Larry, you don't force anything. You don't coerce anything. You don't hold any thoughts. You don't put in anything. You always take it out. Always. It is already in there." His mind was all burdened with the things he had to do, and he had a lot of responsibility, and he was making it a personal thing. He had to make things happen. "Now is the time to relax," I told him. "We take everything out." And he said, "Then what makes it happen?" And I said, "It's like you put the acorn in the ground. That's your part. Now there is an idea involved in that, and nothing can happen to the idea but that it will grow. And nothing can stop it but its own law. It has its own evidence. The oak tree is already there. You put an idea into your mind, and it will work exactly the same way, because the universe is one system." "Well," he said, "then I don't have to strain." And I said, "No. The more you strain, the harder it's going to be." It's a certain relaxation. So take a deep breath and relax. And just remember that it's already in there. We're allowing something that already is in there to come out. And what's in there is good. What's in there is spirit. What's in there is God. And all of the qualities of God, peace and grace and harmony, energy, creativity, inspiration, wisdom, power, all of the qualities of God are in us all the time. We have access to that divine place of peace and serenity all the time. We have access to the creativity of the universe. We have access to the intelligence and the divine order and the divine harmony all the time. What takes us out of that is our belief that we aren't there. And that's what we really need to change. We need to let go of the belief that it isn't already done, that it isn't already perfect, and allow ourselves to see the vision that is the truth. When I was working on this talk, I found a quote from David Hawkins that I've used before when I've been talking about visions. And he said, "Innumerable options are open to everyone all the time, but are relatively infrequently chosen because they lack the context that would make them attractive. One's range of choice is ordinarily limited by one's vision." So if we're living a narrow vision, we don't recognize that we have lots of choices. We aren't a vibrational match to lots of ideas if we believe that there's only one idea. And if we can allow ourselves to expand our vision, then we can have a much longer list of things that we can choose from, because we expand the context, as David Hawkins said, that allows us to choose. When Ernest was talking about vision and anatomy of healing prayer, he said, "Jesus said, 'Behold,' and they all looked up and said, 'We don't see a thing.' But Jesus saw something, and what he saw was real and dynamic." And again in the book, he said, "Where is the vision? Are you looking at a valley of dry bones or mountain peaks and summits of splendor and glory? Because wherever the vision is, there is the imagery that molds the circumstances under which we live. So if we're looking higher, in my yoga class they say, look up, because where your eyes go, your body follows. And that is so true. Where our eyes go, our bodies follow. If you're driving in your car and you suddenly look over here, have you noticed how you tend to swerve to the right? Where our eyes go, our bodies follow. And we need to take the opportunity as often as possible to uplift our vision, to see a broader perspective. And we see a broader perspective by practicing the presence. As Reverend Hillary talked about, practicing staying in the present, and practicing the presence, we are in the presence of God 100% of the time. And a friend of mine called me the other day and she said, somebody was talking about practicing the presence and I'm just not seeing what that is. Tell me what that is. And I said, when I pray, I say, and now I turn my awareness to the presence of God. And the only thing that ever changes is my awareness of the presence. The presence of God is constant. So practicing the presence is constant, consciously choosing to be aware of the constant presence of Spirit. There is nowhere God is not. God is omnipresent. So anywhere we look, we can see the presence. You can see it in the eyes of a child or in a flower really easily, at least I can. I can see it in the blue sky, but some days it's hard for me to see it in the rainstorm. So practicing seeing the presence everywhere, the easiest way to do that, I think, is to practice where it's easy and spend as much time as possible looking for things that you appreciate. Because as you get more facile at seeing the presence everywhere around you, then it becomes simpler and simpler to see it in places that previously were harder to see it. I was at the park last night, and I saw a bluebird fly by. And I had thought about not taking my binoculars because I wasn't planning on taking a very long walk, but I decided to take them with me. So I saw this blue bird fly by into a tree, and I had my binoculars, and I walked closer to the tree, and I looked, and I thought it was an eastern bluebird, but it wasn't. It was an indigo bunting. And I have never seen an indigo bunting alive before. One of my friends showed me the body of an indigo bunting once. But how awesome it was that I had taken with me the capacity for a broader perspective. And that I didn't just assume it was the bluebird that is always there, that I see often in the woods, that it was something that was worth another look. And I got to see a bird that was like truly magic to me that I had never seen before on the wing. So when we make the choice to look through the broader perspective, there's more to see. There's more details, there's more beauty, there's more wonder. And Spirit is always seeing all of this as beautiful and wonderful and free. There is that great song, I don't know who wrote it, but Bette Midler sang it, From a Distance. God is watching us from a distance. And from Spirit's perspective, everything is unfolding as it should. And everything happens by law of attraction, and we can choose the direction of our thought, and therefore we can choose the signature vibration of our life. But until we make conscious choice to choose the direction of our thought, we tend to think along with the consciousness of our culture, which is often based in fear or lack or anger or limitation in some way. And so it takes tuning into a different channel in order to receive on a different channel. It's like dialing the dial on your radio station. You don't hear 98.6 when you're tuned to 103.5. Now, all of the channels are God, but some of the channels are God filtered through fear, and some of the channels are God filtered through love. So what filter are you going to choose? What channel are you going to tune into? Because as we put our attention on anything, we get more of it. So if we watch horror movies and we spend a lot of time cultivating fear, then we probably tune into things to be afraid of. And if we are spending our time looking for things to get angry about, we probably spend a lot more time attracting things to get angry about. And if we spend our time looking for things that are beautiful, we'll see a lot more things that are beautiful. And when we choose to spend our time looking to give and receive love, then there'll be a lot more love to give and receive. So those choices are what we end up living. And again, in Anatomy of Healing Prayer, Ernest said, we have to extend our own consciousness inward and upward if we are going to extend it further outward, because it will only cast a shadow equal to its own height and breadth. We manifest in our lives what we are, basically, what we think about, what we focus on, what our intention brings us. So if we focus on music, we get a lot more music. If we focus on joy, we get a lot more joy. And that's how we focus our vision. We begin to make some conscious choices about where we want to focus. The another thing Ernest said was, I think there is a soul-touching and intellectual process that stretches the intellect through the imagination and feeling until it lets in more spiritual territory, which now becomes a part of the intellect. And I cannot conceive that we reach a place where chaos is and we don't have any intellect or intelligence. I don't think we push out into the universe to the loss of our identity. I think we take in more territory and more and more. In another place, he said, loose the boundaries of your sense of self and take in more spiritual territory. Loose the boundaries. We have this idea that we exist in a small package, some of us bigger than others, but to be the limitations of our physical sense is not true, because there is so much more to us than we see, so much more than our physical bodies and our personalities. There's our spirits, and our spirits, bless you, are always the largest parts of who we are. There is never a time when we are not eternal and immortal and infinite, as well as finite. And so defining ourselves from our finite perspective limits us. We want to practice defining ourselves as unlimited, because lots and lots of people are willing to tell us how limited we are.
Thank you.
And we don't need to go there. We can invite ourselves to explore the unlimited nature of who we are. And how do we do that? We meditate. We go within. We seek that which is inside of us in order to expand our capacity to know who we are. But sometimes it really helps, as we do the meditations, to allow ourselves to connect with the consciousness of those who have explored those inward and wonderful places in consciousness already. And Ernest Holmes certainly is one of the most powerful teachers that I've ever explored, because he is the kind of teacher I want to be. He lived in his own personality. He loved parties. He had a great life. He was a wonderful cook. He had lots of intentions for hospitality. He took great vacations. He lived in beautiful places. He knew lots of amazing people. He had wonderful conversations. He existed in a life that was as fully realized as he possibly could, because he believed, as I do, that the more you live the fullness of your life, the more you truly are the real self.
Amen.
Mm-hmm. So he what he said was, now you embark on an experiment in practice. You are going to travel into a country no one ever went to before. All we can tell you is there is such a country. There is that within you that is unique, is what he's saying. You are the one who can go there. And then he said, there are a few little wheels that don't squeak so badly, but you have to do the traveling. And those wheels he's talking about are prayer and meditation and spiritual reading, the visioning and practices that you study so that you can explore that country within you that is beautiful. When you reach that country, here you will be your only and sole teacher, not in the development of the techniques, although you will develop techniques, but in the use of those you have, you will discover there is a feeling that goes with your word. Now, I'm not talking about an emotion, but a deep, inward, indefinable something that I don't think anybody can give to anyone else. I think that when we sit with or listen to or read books written by people who have this thing, we get it. So we have this capacity to go to that country within us and then share it with each other through our practice, when we sit together to meditate, when we pray together, when we come and talk together about broader perspective. What we are doing is practicing that broader vision. We're practicing connecting to that divine energy within us so that we recognize it, so that we vibrate it with it, so that we can experience it more fully. I have way more than I could talk about during this time, but the one last quote that I wanted to share for sure is, our whole practice is based on the concept that God is where we are and what we are, and that there isn't anything else. Our whole concept is partly based on the theory that whatever appears to be wrong is not wrong in itself, but is the wrong arrangement of what is right. And so when we pray, what we are doing is creating the right arrangement of what is right. We are reminding ourselves of the wholeness that is not something to be disintegrated or reintegrated, but only that which is already within us, the center of God that is in every person, in every place, in every atom of space, in every moment of time. We are allowing ourselves to dwell in that presence, to go to that place, to open our hearts to the truth of who we are, and allow that divine nature more sway in the world, to allow ourselves to be more creative, to be more peaceful, to be more clear, to be more powerful. And what more could we ask than that? Ernest's inspiration is timeless to me. A lot of people read the textbook and they say he's hard to read. And yet, you know, when I read Anatomy of Healing Prayer, there are lines that speak to me so powerfully that it feels like I am just transported, and that when I sit with or listen to or read books written by Ernest who have this thing, I get it. So thanks for sharing with me that wonderful book, because it's my favorite.